Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
Good evening, I'm Stephen Lane.
And I'm Bobby Norris. Welcome to our Christmas special, where we'll be looking back at some of our favourite Access All Areas interviews from 2022.
It has been quite the year. We've seen three prime ministers and the lettuce outlasting one of them, a new king and the potential death of Twitter.
Blimey, what a year when you put it like that. And what a year for showbiz. Will Smith's Oscar slap, probably become the biggest showbiz news since La La Land, was wrongly announced as best film. We've sadly lost Hollywood legends such as Dame Olivia Newton-John and Angela Lansbury, and the world become gripped over one simple question. Did Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine?
We're all still waiting for the answer to that, I think. And throughout all of this, we've been interviewing reality stars, drag queens, and even the odd musician. So tonight, we will be reminiscing on some of our highlights from this year, including interviews from Brian McFadden, Amber Gill, and Graziano De Prima.
So sit back and enjoy, guys.
Amber Gill is here, so let's get home for a chat.
Fab.
Hello, babes.
How are you? All right. I'm good. How are you?
Really good, thank you. Really good. Thanks for joining us.
No, I'm excited. Thanks for having us.
What's all the balloons for? Has it been a party?
It was my birthday on the 4th of August, so last week, but it
they've lasted like, well.
Well, they're expensive. I was picking them up. Like, I didn't realise how expensive balloons were. I'm like, that's staying up until I can't physically stand anymore. Honestly.
Did you have a lovely birthday?
Yeah, I did. So I moved into a new apartment recently and nobody had seen it yet. So I just had like a couple of people around my house. And so it was really nice because normally I don't do anything, but one of my best friends like forced us to do something and I was like, well, I'll do something in the house then. So it was good.
Are you not a huge birthday person? I'm not either.
Nah.
Me neither.
It's my birthday
when it comes,
Monday and I don't
when it
really
comes
like, yeah, but I'm like maybe a bit of dinner, but I hate the thought of a party. It's just never my thing, believe it or not.
Yeah, no, it knocks me sick. Like, and people don't expect that from me because they're like, oh, you think you're the main character? And I'm like, but when it's my birthday, I'm like, no, I don't want anything.
Isn't it funny?
So you're a Leo, are you a Leo?
Leo, yeah.
I think it's a Leo thing. I think you can either love it or hate it. I think there's no in between because every Leo that I know either absolutely adores like throwing parties or they don't want nothing to do with it.
So funny, isn't it? I love going to a party, but the thought of it being mine and the whole walking around making sure everyone else is all right, I'm like, nah, let's have a chicken bowl.
I had a bartender because I was like, I'm not giving everyone drinks and stuff, I'll forget because I'm not a very good host. So I had a bartender then, I'm like, you can sort yourselves out, like, as long as everyone's having a good time.
Was it one that just wears the apron in the bath?
No, he was fully clothed.
Disappointing.
That would have been a bit far for me and me house, like, not my vibe.
Congratulations on the book, by the way.
Thank you. I can't believe it.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Yeah, it feels really weird to like hold it. It's been like just over a month now since it like released, since it published. Mm. And yeah, like Mills and Boone approached me. Well, HarperCollins approached me initially because they were really interested in like diversifying the audience, the authors, the characters in the book, because they were very much aware that it was like all like predominantly middle-class white women. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really want that. And so it started off me hosting a competition where only people from underrepresented ethnic backgrounds could enter. And the prize was that they would have a year's editing, publishing deal with HarperCollins, which I just thought was an amazing opportunity. And then I think as like my relationship grew with HarperCollins and Mills and Boone, they were like, you've got like a real interest in this. Like we can tell, like I was going to do English at university. I used to love reading romance. Like English is just my thing. Never ever wanted to write because who on earth walks around thinking that like, oh, I could write a book. Like I never ever thought in a million years. Like, I'm like, you're basically illiterate. How the hell are you going to be able to write a book? Do you know what I mean? And so they were like, yeah, no, they were just like, well, think that you'd be like perfect. I think it would be like amazing for you to do, like, just have a think about it. And I was like, ah, you're throwing us in a deep end here, but like, I'll go for it. But I need like some sort of help. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll give you like a co-writer. So I had a couple of meetings with like different people and I met this woman called Nadine and she was just like the best ever. Like it was like having my hand held whilst I was doing everything, which was just like really affirming because I think especially when you've got a platform as well, nothing you do can be bad. It can't be bad. it has to be tip top perfection. Mm-hmm. Like, it can't be bad.
And otherwise, so you'll like, get torn apart, sort of thing.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, if I had like 3,000 followers, I could put anything out there and it would be fine. But there's the pressure is on. And so, yeah, Nadine was like the best. I'd send her a bit. She'd come back. She's 6-time published Mills and Boone, so she knows what she's doing. And then me and her just collaborated on making this really cute tropical escapism romance that's just lush to read. And it's got characters like me and like all my friends. And it's just really nice.
And I love it, like, someone our age is doing, do you know what I mean? Because I kind of think traditionally when people think of them books, it's always seen as like an older yeah. person's, if that's all right to say, do you know what I mean? So I think someone writing from almost our perspective and our generation, it's just massive.
Yeah, and it's good for people to read because obviously there's young readers as well. But like you said, I always thought writers would be like going watering their plants and then coming back and typing a book up and like married, lives in the countryside, like not me,
wandering in and out.
Not like me, like Nutter from Newcastle's writing romance novels. You know what I mean? So yeah, and that was part of like what I wanted to do. It was just like showing people that, like, you know, anyone can do it, and that, you know, it's good to have representation in books because I would have loved to read something similar to me. I mean, the only thing that I think is sort of hard was like, you know, you sort of Tracy Beakers and that kind of thing. But I used to like reading like Pride and Prejudice, but there was just a sort of disconnect. Mm-hmm. And it would have been nice to, although that's good for the purpose, it would have been nice to read something that sort of resonated with me a little bit more when I was younger. And so I'm glad to like be able to do that.
So where do you take your inspiration from? Is there like real life?
You have to call your friends and be like...
Literally,
that's almost like a free reign, isn't it, to think of every man you've ever dated horror stories. I mean, that in itself, sure, do you know what I mean? Let's be able to just change his name.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's so hot. That's the pressure because there's no structure. You can choose whatever you want. Yeah. You can choose whatever character names you want. They can be whatever you want. It could be whatever you want. So you've just like got everything to think about. But I think for me, I took bits of inspiration from a lot of different things. So it's set in Tobago, and my dad's from Trinidad and Tobago, and I think that it sort of gets overlooked as a holiday destination and stuff. And I've been, and so I was like, I would love to write about that, and hopefully that makes people go, oh, actually, I want to go to Tobago. It sounds really nice. And so, yeah, I was just taking little bits of inspiration from wherever I could find, my friends, not really my experiences, because I wanted to be creative. I didn't want it to be like,
You don't want to do a reality show.
Or everyone goes into Love Island and then, no, I don't want to write anything like that, no. And that's actually traumatic. My book is nice. Like, you know, I don't want to talk about what happened with me because that's not good.
And this almost you don't want to give someone the success of it, right? You know they'll be reading it anyway. You don't want to almost give them the pleasure of thinking, oh, that character's me.
Yeah, exactly. But the more that I speak to people that have read it, they're like, oh, I think that's you. I think you've, you know, I could see the similarities. And I was like, oh, that's not what I was trying to do, but okay, we'll take it. I'm glad that people are thinking that deeply into it though. So I'm like, clearly you like it. If you're thinking that deeply into it and you're really reading it like that, then you must like it. And that's all I care about. So.
Well, speaking of Love Island, you were quite vocal this series, weren't you, about what you thought was going on?
Never again.
Tell us a bit what you're thinking was behind it, because you were getting involved in some, well, not involved because they didn't know what you were saying, but like, you know, when there was fights going on in the house or the way that some of the girls were being treated and stuff, you were quite involved in it, right?
Well, every year since I came off the show, I've just like, I love the show now more so than before I went on it, because I kind of know what's going on, and I kind of feel like I'm an insider, like I know what's happening. And so I love watching it. I feel like a major super fan, and just I'm naturally on Twitter quite a lot anyway, so I just started off writing tweets, and then every year I get bullied into like talking about it, like, what, you I can't wait for your tweets this year. I said, who said I was gonna do tweets this year? I'm not gonna do it.
First episode, get, you're like,
yeah, and then first episode comes and I'm like, da, 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 da. But then I get like, you know, partnerships from it, and I like doing it. I like reviewing things. I think that's something that I need to explore, because I like reviewing things. I like watching something and then having an opinion on it. I find like I just love it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got involved in some of the conversations, and not everybody likes it. But I think people need to get over it, because it's important to talk about some of the things that happen, or like real life issues as well. Like, and I think that girls, especially young girls that watch it, I didn't want any of them I didn't want any of them to think some of the stuff that was happening there's normal and like that's okay, like, oh, they're just lover, that's why they're acting that way. And so I like to be vocal about that. As much as I am lighthearted, I just like to make sure that there's an underlying message in there that I'm saying, like, actually, no, that's not what we want from guys at all. But I get told off all the time for that, but it is what it is, isn't it?
And how was social media in response to that? Did you kind of find a little bit of backlash to having an opinion? So I kind of think we're in this weird state now that by being vocal about things and having an opinion, I think some people look to be offended. And whatever you write, it's coming from, it's your opinion and your fault. So everyone's entitled to that. But then people jump on it and then fire off death threats and craziness. You're like, what is going on?
It's just, it's gone like sort of the other way where we're calling a lot of things hate and bullying. That's just not that. It's really not that. You know, when I watch Love Island, like, I appreciate every single person that goes on the show. I don't hate anyone that's on it. Like, I don't feel that strongly. All of my tweets are just about the show. As soon as it switches off, I don't think anything more about it. I'd never go and send them a message because I don't feel like that. And I think that, yeah, we've just got to a point now where you kind of churn out because it's all like, oh, well, you're hating her, bullying. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm allowed to have an opinion. You do what I mean? But people always say to me, like, oh, but you preach be kind. I'm like, I didn't. I believe sometimes.
I don't believe in being kind, actually.
Sometimes I believe it, just a minute bit of bullying. It's just, you know, it's necessary. Even for myself, like, I get it. I've made mistakes. I've been dragged for it. And sometimes, you know, it has
keep
to
you
be
in
done.
Check.
Exactly. But there's a massive difference, isn't there, from sitting there watching a TV show, having an opinion, and then putting something on Twitter or on your Instagram stories, to then the other end of the scale where people are sending death threats. So there's a massive difference, isn't there?
Yeah, huge difference. And I think people sometimes like fail to see that. And I'm like, I would never. And I think as well, if I didn't like something, I wouldn't look at it. So I don't know why some people come to my page, don't look, because you know what I'm going to say. Like, you know, we're getting the gist of it. It's been 3 years now. You know what my kind of opinions are going to be. If you don't like it, don't look at it.
And when people say the word hate, hate is such a strong emotion that actually sometimes there's an indifference. You've got to care about something to hate it, if that makes sense. So people go, you hate it, like, in the nicest possible way, couldn't give a shit.
That's why, like, I tweet and then, like, it goes out my brain and I think I actually don't care at all, you know?
Yeah, when you
and
go to bed that night, you ain't thinking about it.
Yeah,
you're like,
it's done. It's done. Yeah. It was all lighthearted, like, yeah. And then as soon as it all come off the show, like, I'll follow the ones that I like and stuff and we won't talk about it again. We won't talk about it again and that's it. But
Is that what happened when you said, I don't know kind of necessarily what context means, but when you talked about switching teams?
I knew what you were going to say that.
Well, I mean, because was that just an off-the-cuff comment? What do you mean? What did you mean by it when you said it?
It was an off-the-cuff comment, but it was true. But then everybody's twisted it and said that, like, now I can't stand men. And that's not actually true. Unfortunately, I wish I could, but I just can't. So I meant exactly what I said.
So is that like you coming out? I'm a bit confused. I mean, I don't want to force you into saying anything that you don't feel, but I mean, that's what it sounded like.
Accidentally. I remember looking at it and thinking, shit, like, what have I said? And they were like, if a lot of my friends were like, if you were going to do that anyway, that's the typical way that you would do that. Like, normally people have these lovely, beautiful stories, a lovely, beautiful, real Instagram posts, like, just lush. I put switching teams on a tweet and that's how it came out. So, great.
Iconic.
Yeah, that's like, it's typical me.
Have you got like a lady in your life?
I don't, not right now.
But you're looking for one.
No, never looking. I always think that you find the wrong people if you actively look, but I just left whatever come in. Do you know what I mean?
You're open to it, is what you're saying.
I'm open to it, yeah. Okay. I'm open to it.
How do you find dating babes now? Like, do you find it very different to pre-Love Island to go out and date someone and get to know them?
I do. I don't know why, but I find it really difficult and I can't, like, I really don't know, like, the reason behind it, but I just, I'm very picky now and, like, I'm very, like, fine-tuning to what I like and what I don't like, so I don't know if that's part of the reason. And then you just wonder, like, I always wonder, like, I wonder if they ever, like, wrote a horrible tweet about me, like, you know, like,
scrolling through.
And if they be like, oh, I watch Love Island, I'm like, I wonder if they like me or not, like, that's a good indicator, like, but I just, I'm very scared, I'm very wary, and I think that it's a bit of a struggle, but I don't know. How do you feel, Bobby? Because I don't know.
I know exactly what you mean. It's weird, isn't it? Because I think people would think it's the complete opposite. But yeah. I actually think it's harder to meet people when you are in our industry.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why that is. Maybe there's a bit of people know your life. So when you would normally sit over a table having your steak and chips or whatever you're having, and you're getting to know each other on an equal ground, like you're asking questions as much as they are. But when people almost know after the answers to the questions, it kind of it kind of messes up the levels a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I always, you know what I hate? When people are like, no, I didn't watch Love Island, I didn't watch Love Island. And then you get into the conversation, they'll go, oh yeah, but what about that? And I'm like, well, didn't you just say that you didn't watch it? Yeah, that sounds to me like someone that watched it.
You're like, with your notepad.
Isn't that the worst? I go, yes, I've never ever watched it. Two gin and tonics later. So what do you really think about what's she like? And I'm thinking, but you've never watched it, boo. What are you talking about?
That's like one of my biggest icks. I can't with that. Because I'm like, if you watch it, then just say it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've never got someone, never seen that, never heard of it. Because it's just like, I just like to own whatever it is, you know? Then it makes it less weird. Because then I think, oh, you're a bit of a strange one, aren't you? Like, why would you think,
I feel like the need for bullshit lies? Just to be honest.
Already? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Already? That's not a good sign.
What's your list of icks? If you were sat on a date, have you got like three things that you can't? Like, I want to see this person again, or there's threat, like, you're not, no, that is warning signs.
If you're like in a restaurant or something, I can't stand people that are rude to like waiters or like people that are helping, anything like that. I can't stand it. Like, I'm like, oh, I would hate if someone is too much on Instagram, like wanting to take pictures of everything. This is for a guy though. I don't have that many icks when it comes to girls, but for guys, I'm way harsher actually. So yeah, that's
maybe that's an indication to how you're feeling in your head about.
You know what I mean? Like, this is what I think. I'm like, oh, maybe that's what that means. But whatever. Yeah, if they're like snapping too much on social media. What else do I not like? I hate when people are really arrogant. Like, I think I can read people quite well. Like, I'm just really good at it. And if somebody's not being their authentic self, like, I pick up on it in like 5 seconds, and I hate that. That's like a massive ick. So I'm like, just be normal.
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more. What would be your ideal if he was to date a girl? Have you kind of, would you ever, I hate saying this to people that have been on Love Island because it's so cliche. Like, I'm not going to say your type on paper. But generally, what would be your type? If you was to date a girl or you saw a nice lady out.
You know what? I'm going to say something really cliche to you. I don't have a type.
That's nice though, isn't it? Going into completely.
If you look, if I put a lineup of everybody that I dated, there's no correlation with anything. There's no correlation. There's a little something, and you either have it or you don't have it, and that's it. But everybody, like, looks completely different, personalities are completely different. Like, it can be anyone.
I'm the same. Some of my friends, like, literally, if you had a room full of clones, you would know that was one of her exes, like, everything about them, almost the same tattoos, the same whatever. Whereas me, if they was lined up, you'd be like, can't work out what's going on.
There's no pattern.
That's what my friends say to me. They're like, what the hell are you? Like, what is it? I'm like, I don't know. It's just something.
It's the person, isn't it? It's the soul.
Yeah.
The energy.
It's definitely the soul and energy. I believe in that 100%. Because that lineup is wild.
Well, Amber, that is a perfect note to leave on. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks, guys.
This evening, and best of luck with the book. And
thank you. So
I hope
much.
It leads to many more.
Hopefully, we'll hope so.
Thanks, Amber.
Thank you so much, guys.
Cheers.
You're welcome, bye, darling.
I had so much fun. Bye.
Bye. Well, we have our first guest. Gorgeous Grats.
We love a bit of the Grats.
Graziano de Prima. So let's get him in for a chat. How is the new year treating you so far? What have you been up to?
I mean, we are planning the wedding for the third time, and this year has to happen for sure. plus, I'm discussing for the show for Here Come the Boys, because later in the year I'm going to do the Pro Tour first. Of Strictly, and then I'm gonna come back on Here Come the Boys, plus Top Secret. I'm gonna choreograph a new show, so I'm gonna have a meeting with the producer soon. So a few things are coming on.
Busy boy. How are the wedding plans going? Like you say, this is now the third time.
Yeah, basically everything is set apart from the date, because we changed the date from the 18th of the first year and then the 9th and this year the 8th. Everything is set. The church is set. The castle is set. Everything. We're going to be in the middle of Here Come the Boys tour. When they ask me
to come back,
yeah, I just asked them, I need at least 4 days to go back in Sicily, have my wedding, and then come back. And they said, yeah, we're going to find a way to, you know, to make you go and then you can come back. It's going to be a weird thing when, you know, you get married and then the day after you're going to be in London performing. It's going to be such a weird thing. But yeah,
but
it's been a tough year for everyone.
That's exactly what I was going to say. This is the world we live in now, right? Like you can't, like we've talked about on the show before, actually, making plans is like has been the hardest thing in the last 2 years, any kind of plan, whether it's even just seeing family or you know, going on a holiday. You just never know what's going to happen. So more power to you, because that's a lot to do. But I think it's probably likely that it will go ahead. That's the most exciting thing.
I think so. I think this time, 3 is a magic number. I think this time is going to go.
Yeah.
And how does your lovely fiance feel about you literally day after having to jet back to continue the tour? Does she get it?
Yeah, I mean, she's going to be dancing with me. She's going to be dancing with me on Here Come the Boys.
Oh, is she? That's exciting.
Yeah, because other than Strictly, we plan all the time to find a way to dance together. Firstly, because it's easier for me, because when you are used to dance with, you know, somebody that we have been dancing for years, even, you know, choreographing, put all the leads and stuff is easier. Plus, you know, it's just a chance to stay together, because with Strictly tours, we are apart. She's doing Dance with the Stars in Italy. That was last year, contemporary with Strictly. So we were apart for 4 or 5 months.
Wow.
So we've been apart this year. But yeah, with that excuse, we can stay together.
So basically, the tour is your honeymoon then?
Yeah. I would not say that, but yeah.
The question is she going to let you dance with me on Strictly this year, Graham?
Absolutely, yes. I'm ready. When we can sign, send me the paper.
Get your people to speak to my paper. We'll make it happen.
I would pay good money.
I would love to. I mean, Strictly is crazy. Talking about the journey, having a few different, let's say, celebrities make the journey completely different. Judy was, when I met Judy, I was like, whoa, it's going to be a really tough time for me. But then I met her, we became friends, and I had the best journey ever. We were laughing every day. We were working hard. You know what? In the end of the day, as a professional dancer, we can do as much as we can. But if the celebrity doesn't allow us to push them, there is nothing we can do. Nothing at all. And Judy, literally, she told me, I want to do this for me and for you. And because I was thinking, oh my God, we're going to leave the first week, I'm sure. But because she literally took the, you know, the journey seriously, was the key. For me, week 6 was like being the final.
It was so fun to watch. I think that was the energy that you and Judy gave off was like spectacular.
The friendship as well. The friendship is still real. We call each other. She's in vacation now. You know, it's such a real person, and she's so genuine as well. And this literally helped me in my journey on Strictly, because, you know, everyone expects from me, oh, another guy with long hair, open shirt, sexy. But yeah, I know who I am physically, but I'm easy. I'm a normal guy. And, you know, of course, Strictly is a big thing for us, but I want to come out as a me first, as a person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So she helped me a lot in that.
And the twerking.
And twerking. Oh my, when the production told me you're gonna dance the samba, I said, oh my God. And then they told me you're gonna dance with Get Busy, Sean Paul. And I start to like the situation. First day, the rehearsal, I was teaching her, and I was finding the way to teach her the bounce, the main action on the samba. She told me, babe, I can't twerk. What? Look at that. And she literally turned in front of me. She started to twerk.
So and I said,
perfect. This is going to be, there are two ways. I was going to be hilarious. Oh, it's going to be fantastic. It was the key.
And it was like, I feel like one of the moments of the whole series. Like,
I mean, that's why we realized after the show, because literally after receiving the video from Sean Paul, like, are you kidding me? Literally. No, we had the best time. Best time.
Iconic, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, during the rehearsal, imagine she was rehearsing in front of the mirror and trying to, you know, to twerk. And she was teaching me how to.
I love
it. I was literally loving my life. I was like, yes. No, literally.
And I guess it makes it so much more enjoyable for you if you get on with the celeb and they're giving you 100%.
It's another story. Yeah. Imagine just for a second spending 10 hours a day where obviously, you know, another 14 couples are rehearsing and you know that you want to do your best job for that person and you know you need to push that person because that person probably never danced before. Mm-hmm. You need to understand how that person learned the steps because there are so many ways. There are people that are learning just watching. Judy, she just wanted to watch and then she will try. There are people that need to practice 1,000 times one movement. It's not easy at all. And you need to make the person comfortable, which is the toughest thing, I think, because that's why you need to be real with each other and say, look, what you want of this experience? What do you want? You want to literally work hard and have fun, or you want to just stay here? And because it's not easy. You never know Maybe the person comes across that is the funniest person, but then trust me, after backstage, many hours, every day, the reality is going to come out.
You know,
maybe that's our job. That's why we signed for Strictly, because we are dancers, but we are also teacher. And yeah, we'll see next year.
And you're keen to come back for the next series? I guess they'll probably...
It's usually fairly early in
the year that they actually announce who the dancers are, don't they?
Yeah, I think they're going to ask us soon. Next month, I think. They're going to ask us if you want to come back. Obviously, mm-hmm. Yes. Strictly changed my life completely. It's a massive thing. And the production help us a lot, make us feel like comfortable. And if we need anything, they're always there, even in the night, everything.
And how did you feel about Giovanni winning, a fellow Italian? Was that actually a good moment, or were you like jealous?
Really happy for him. This guy, we know each other. He's older than me. He got 4 years more than me. Mm-hmm. We know each other since I was 10.
Oh, really?
Sicily, both of us studying in the same academy together, and then he left for coming here. I'm really happy for him because he has been, you know, he had many good partners. Each of us got a different journey. Obviously, receiving a good partner is something that's going to help you mm-hmm. to go further to the competition. He had really good partners through the years and he could possibly win even in the past. And I was really happy for him because I know it wasn't the easiest thing to teach a person that is deaf. And there's nothing you can do about it. There is no escape. There is no way you can go easy. And
there's no book to teach you how to do that. You just have to learn. You have to work.
Once more, he realized that he could do his job. I think his best skill is to bring out the skill of each celebrity he got through the years. And when I saw him winning, I said, good boy, finally. After many seasons, he's been working hard, each of us. And because I really know him, the thing is, we really appreciate each other. And we know this funny, we got this funny way where we literally play, even in the show where we are doing the professional choreography. We talk in Sicilian, we talk in Italian, and we laugh about it. Because in coming from South, we know how tough can be our job.
Mm-hmm.
And we know our key is say always yes, never no, always. Even if we are struggling, even if we are in pain. And he's the one that when there is a chance where we have to do lift. He's always say no. And me, I'm the one to say, again, I know you're the oldest pro, blah, 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 but you need to, you know, this is our job.
Yeah.
But really, really happy about him. He deserved it. He deserved it. And even if saying, okay, Rose is deaf, but think about Joanne is dancing with a mountain beside me. And Joanne, we are like bread and butter. I'm always there for him. He's always there for me. And I was telling him, how can you possibly make this man, this mountain, dance? And also because for the final, we are like the stand-up dancers if something goes wrong. He has done an amazing job, because I cannot compare the same thing with Giovanni Rose, because it's different. It's a completely different thing. But to make a male dancer, make a male person dancing with you and find a way to do female part, male part, you got the pressure of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't easy for him. And I'm really, really extremely proud of him.
And every year Strictly seems to just keep going up a level, doesn't it?
Like, I know.
The last one was literally so hard to call. Obviously, we speak about it every week on the show.
Yeah.
And it was... It's just so hard that the talent, it's just incredible. And the show, just considering how long it's been on, it becomes
nearly 20 years.
Incredible, yeah. Isn't it? And still that format's incredible.
You know what? They are really clever. And also how they structured the show. In the first year where I joined, and also the second one, we used to do all the choreographies, the pro choreographies during the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard because, you know, you have to rehearse for your own show with the celebrity. Plus, you have to make sure you deliver a beautiful dance with other pros where, you know, you got somebody jumping and you need to catch it. So mentally, you need to be clever. The past few years with COVID, they find a way to book a hotel, as you know. And it was the best thing, because in that period, we were just thinking about dancing as a dancer, as a, you know, we were just studying, you know, what's tough after, you know, COVID. We were the first week after 3 days of rehearsal where everyone was, even people that doesn't want to do stretching, on the floor doing stretching, full of cramps. It's not easy. It's a process.
Yeah, but
you realize that Strictly really listened to us, because we said, look, there is something that we need to balance. We cannot do 100, everything 100. We can't. Our body is not ready for it. We need time. Mm. And also in terms of how to deliver the show, as you see, there are so many different pros. They find a way to find each year, each season, different pro, and maybe different from another country. You know, each of us is different. And that's the thing also, the same program in other countries are looking over to understand why Strictly is so successful. Because every year they find a way they bring another thing.
And the viewers just keep on coming, I think, don't they? Yeah. Honestly, Grats, we could speak to you all night, but we're running out of time. So when is the tour coming?
I mean, I've got April, May, Strictly, May, June, July, Here Come the Boys. And literally, let me know if you're free. I want you there. You're going to have fun.
Well, I'm definitely up for that. 100% up for that.
And then we can plan our first dance when we do.
Absolutely. I'm going to make sure I'm without shirt. I'm shirtless.
I'm signing the contract as we speak, Grats.
Melanie Rose from How to Build a Sex Room on Netflix is here. Let's get her in and chat all things sex rooms, I guess.
I can feel the steaminess coming through the zone. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Really good, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. We're both so excited to speak with you.
Oh, I have to say, it's really lovely and beautiful to hear an English accent.
You've been doing lots of American chats, have you? Or on the show?
Yeah, I have. And I did talk to an English journalist a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, England accent, how fabulous.
Feels at home.
Yeah.
Yes, I've even got my cup of tea as well, darlings.
Oh, how lovely. So tell us, I mean, when you hear the name of this show, How to Build a Sex Room, many things may be conjured up. But in reality, actually, the show is not, I haven't watched all of it, but I mean, like, you know, in reality, the show is actually not kind of as filthy as it might initially sound, is it? Tell me how you got involved with it and what you made of it when it was first brought to you.
Yeah, I think the selling point, you know, what's that old adage, sex always sells. Mm-hmm. So having sex in the title is bound to, excuse the pun, prick up a few ears here. You know, I think it, and I think you're right, as you get to watch the episodes, you realize it's really not just about how to build a sex room. It's about people's relationships and how they, you know, how they got together and why they need my help as an interior designer. It initially started, were you asking me a question about how it actually started with Netflix and ITV or?
And you and how you got involved. Yeah. So a bit of your history and all of that.
Yeah, I have been an interior designer for very many, many years. And in the last 10 years, I've specialized in building sex rooms. I actually got involved with the show simply because I was writing a series of erotica novels as a fictional character, more or less about my time as an interior designer designing these wonderful rooms. So I had a manager, and my manager was talking to Adam Scher of ITV America. And he was like, hang on a second, I need to meet this woman. So we met, and he was like, "You're not interested in anything to do with the books or a television series. I just want you as an interior designer, and I want to do the reality show of how you build sex rooms for, you know, for people that you know, could be your next door neighbor."
And how does that first come back? Like you say, you've been an interior designer 4 years. So how do you go from your first job when someone says, can you do me a sex room? How do you go from normally doing a kitchen thinking it'll be a lovely island there with a vision, maybe a hot...
To a swing and yeah, and all sorts.
Yeah, how was that first gig for you?
Well, actually, you know, how it came about was quite interesting. I was actually working with a client of mine who I'd been working with for 4 or 5 years now. And we just happened to be in the bedroom. We were talking about how to, you know, locks on doors and, you know, closets and stuff like that. And they turned around to me and said, have you ever built a sex room before? And I was like, what? A sex room? No. And she said, oh, I think, you know, thought I'd be very good at it. And I was like, okay. So I went home and actually did a lot of research and was like, you know, just research, research, and research. And what I found was, oh gosh, these are lots of dungeons here. And, you know, they didn't look really appetizing. Well, not appetizing, but they didn't really look very luxurious and comfortable. And I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity to, you know, really do some of these rooms, but make them much more luxurious and bring that element of luxury and mix it with the erotic and exotic.
That's so true. Because I think if you say to a lot of people, sex room, automatically you think of a dark dungeon, whips and chains. Yeah, like you literally think of like Camelot's castle, don't you? Read like a proper down dungeon. Why shouldn't there be some soft furnishings and a bit of crushed velvet or something? Like, let's make it a little bit plush.
Oh, absolutely. You say sex room and everybody goes to dungeon and then they run for the hills. I'm like, for fuck's sake, come on. It can be luxurious. You know, don't think of it that way. You need to see it from my eyes and my perspective as a designer.
So do you start in mind with certain pieces of furniture? I guess every client's different, but now you're such a seasoned pro at doing sex rooms, do you think, right, what you're going to want is, I know, this lovely swing that's going to be great, or you already kind of can picture it?
I think certainly my most important thing is to actually listen to what the client's wants are and then, you know, delve into those really intimate secrets about their sex life, which then gives me an idea, start to form a picture in my mind of what they would like. You know, what are their fantasies? Do they want a room that's just purely dedicated to sex and make it luxurious? Or do they want a fantasy room, you know, because it's part of their alternative lifestyle? So pulling out those little nuggets of information from everybody, from my clients, helps me form an idea of what the room is going to look like.
Do you think that, Fifty Shades of Grey has kind of influenced people to even think about this more? Because I do think there was a bit of a revolution in it being like an open thing almost when that first came out, and then suddenly people were thinking more about sex rooms and the like.
Yeah, I think, look, if you think about what E.L. James did for women, what she did really in essence, whether you like the films or whether you like the books or not, it doesn't matter. What at her core, what she did was she made it okay for women to read erotica. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just, that's brilliant. Men have always had Playboy, Hustler, and sort of like, you know, magazines that you would hide from your parents under the bed somewhere. Those have been around for years. But for mainstream, for women to be able to read mainstream erotica, that's what E.L. James did. Now, yes, did she help the sex industry, the sex toy industry? Absolutely, because she actually helped people. She opened their minds to other things out there that normally people keep quiet about. Same thing with my show. When the show dropped, apparently the sex toy industry, the adult toys, went up 123% because of the show. Because I was talking to people in a way that I think other people could relate to and were like, oh, you know what? The show sparked a conversation here. So why don't we go out and try a flogger? Why don't we go out and, you know, maybe we should try a vibrator or a couple's vibrator? And that was the purpose of the show.
What would your top tips be for anyone listening that thinks, I'm up for that, I like the sound of it, I've got a spare bedroom, might make it a sex room? What would you say to them? Where do they start? Or what's the good and the bad?
I think, look, if you let's take a bedroom scenario for starters. You don't want to like maybe look like a sex room, but you want to have something that's a little bit more romantic. You know, I would perhaps invest in a pair of underbed restraints. Easy. You know, nobody can see them. They'll be hidden. They can be hidden. I mean, if have a look at some different types of sex toys. If it's a couple's toy, you know, there's a wonderful adage of people saying, you know, if I bring a vibrator in my bedroom with my husband, doesn't that make my husband redundant? No, it doesn't make him redundant. It's join in with the fun. Come and, you know, help me. You know, try the vibrator on me. I don't have to do it myself.
So, yeah, get involved. You know,
get involved more. And, you know, get some luxury sheets and some really nice bedding and make it more seductive. Things that I wouldn't do is are no-nos for me. If you've been in a pre-existing relationship and you've got old sex toys from your previous relationship, get rid of them.
Yeah.
For God's sakes. Yeah. Jesus, start afresh. Start a new chapter.
Yeah, no man, no dildo.
It's like, I don't care how many times you've cleaned that fucking thing. You know, it comes with a history.
That's so true. For these couples that, and I guess everyone's slightly different, so I'm generalizing, but for couples that do have a sex room now, is that solely where they have sex? Gone are the days that they actually have sex in the bedroom they sleep in.
Look, no, I don't think so. I think you look at the show, you look at Hannah and Wesley, for instance, the couple that he's a sheriff, deputy sheriff. Their child has taken over the entire house. There's Lego bits everywhere. There's toys everywhere. So they really wanted an area that could actually be their sort of like adult play space where they could be themselves. And, you know, you don't know it's actually down there because I put on some Murphy doors. No, I think you should have sex in the bedroom still. I think you can design and relook at your bedroom and make it something more sumptuous. Gosh, I would encourage to have sex everywhere. Why not? On the sofas, you know, in the kitchen, I don't care. I think it's all about intimacy.
But it's right to say, I think, isn't it, that I think it's pretty much a fact that younger people are having less and less sex, aren't they? Why do you think that is, as someone that's sort of involved in this?
I don't know what that is. I mean, look, we're seeing our world change before our very eyes. I think the importance of, for me, and through this show, is that even if you're not having as much sex, at least be able to talk about it without feeling any shame or the feeling that you're being judged.
Do you feel there is still a bit of a stigma to people talking about sex? I know we've come a long way to where it was maybe even 10, 15 years ago, but is there still an element of embarrassment or shame?
Oh, I think so, very much so. And especially what's really interesting now, I live in America, and, you know, I sweeping generalization here, I think they do a lot of talking, but not a lot of doing. And I think there is that stigma of, you know, we don't want to talk about it. You know, there's always that stigma in England when, you know, if you were back in my day, you know, my generation, if your marriage was not going so well, your parents would just say, suck it up, shove it under the carpet and get on with it. Mm. Whereas now, you know, I think it's like, okay, this is not a healthy relationship. We can get out of it. But, you know, what I want people to do is actually talk about sex.
And with the success of the show, have you had any celebrities kind of contact you, slide in the DMs, drop you any emails saying that I've got a big old gaff here, let's do a sex one together?
Actually, you know, I have over several thousand DMs on my Instagram feed, and I'm like desperately trying to go through them. I can go through some of the comments, but the DMs are a bit too much for me. At this moment in time, no, but you never know.
Would you be up for the challenge of doing a select? I love that. So possibly NDAs might be involved.
Yeah.
Darling, I've always used NDAs, absolutely. Yes, are you kidding me?
I think they're less likely to appear on the show, but maybe they want something privately, perhaps. What about plans for another series at all?
We're still waiting to hear if we're going to have another series. I hope it comes soon, because I think a second season will be absolutely fantastic. I think just through all the press that it's garnered, and, you know, this show has sort of like sparked an awful lot of conversations, not just, you know, in America and the UK, but around the world. So there are people that are, you know, want more, which is absolutely fantastic.
I can't see it not coming back, to be honest. I think it's had such a huge success, and there's nothing like it. And on Netflix, you see so many interior design shows, and we're all fascinated with people's homes, aren't we? We've seen, especially off the back of like Selling Sunset, we're all interested on people's houses. And this is like just the next level of that.
It is. You're absolutely right. There is nothing on television like this. And, you know, I would say to people, if you haven't watched the show, you know, go and watch it on Netflix, and just, you know, it's enlightening. Even I say that as a host. But, you know, I've helped a lot of people along the way. So it's been lovely.
Amazing. I really can't wait to watch the rest of it. Melanie, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Well, we have our next guest, Scott from Five here. So let's get him in for a chat.
Let's do it.
How you been doing, Scott?
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah. Not too bad at all.
It's an exciting time to be back in music for you, I guess.
Yeah. It's nice to actually be able to get back on a stage as well. So, yeah, no, it's pretty good that this all seems to be going away. Or it's certainly going in the right direction.
Tell me, Scott, I want to hear about the new album. What's the sound? Is it going to be, is it what we know and love? Or are you...
It's got a little bit of the past, because I think we're quite mindful when we're doing the album that you couldn't just disappear off the music scene for 20 years and then come back with a completely different sound. So we've kind of tried to be like an adult version of ourselves. There's still a little bit of the nostalgia in there, because, you know, we still do gigs up and down the country and they still love our old music. So it'd be silly to completely turn our backs on that and just go in a different direction. So it's where we think we would have been musically had we have been making music through the years, is what we've tried to do.
And does it feel like 20 years, Scott?
No, because obviously where we've kept our toe in the industry, you know, doing gigs and stuff and doing, you know, doing tours. I mean, what a lot of people don't understand is before the, you know, the pandemic, it wasn't like we've just got back together for this album. We've been active. We've been doing tours all over the world.
Yeah.
It's only... And the only time we've had time to actually make the album is because of the pandemic. So, no, it doesn't feel like 20 years. When I think of it being 20 years, it makes me feel really old. and I don't like that.
And you've got two tours coming up this year, is that right?
Yeah, so we've got, well, actually, there's a few more. We've got one in Australia, end of the year. We've got the 90s Baby Tour, which is a joint act tour in the UK, and like all festival stuff over the summer. So, yeah, keeping really busy.
Has the dynamic changed? I mean, I know you boys have carried on performing throughout, but the fact there's the three of you rather than the five when you started out, has that changed things for you, or is just naturally how it's evolved?
It's naturally how it's evolved. I mean, the three people that are in the band now are three people that want to be in the band, and the other two, you know, they don't want to do it, and that's their choice. And I've got no problem with that, you know. But it it's a happier place. I mean, obviously, when you're younger, you've got a lot going on and you're chucked into the industry at such a young age. I mean, people forget we were, well, Sean was 15 years old. I was 17 years old going into a band.
So young.
And we, you know, 4.5 years of just constantly working. It was brutal. And there were some amazing moments. There were some real dark moments in there. The problem was back in that day, there was mental health weren't a thing, but it was a thing, but no one spoke about it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you just got told to get on the stage, put up and shut up, really, is genuinely what it was. It's a better place to be now. We're doing it because we want to. We're doing it because we're on the stage and we love each other's company now. And we've all got families. We've all got, you know, we've all got kids. It's just great to be in Five at the moment. It really is.
Yeah.
What? Sorry, Bob, go on.
So I was just going to say, you're so right. I think, and thankfully, people speak so much more about mental health now. And there seems to be less stigma around it, even though still to this day, people still feel there is, but we've come on leaps and bounds. Do you feel when you look back, was there not really much duty of care there to protect you? Like if you ever needed someone to speak to?
I mean, honestly, Bob, I mean, I know what you've done to, you know, to try and stop online bullying and stuff like that. And, you know, stuff that you've done is incredible. And yeah, we have come a long way with talking about mental health, especially as men, you know, we don't talk about it, but we're getting there. But back in the day, honestly, I'm not just saying it. There was no help. I mean, I had a mental breakdown. I wasn't well. I walked into that record company and I screamed and shouted and I tried to leave, and all they done was try to chuck more money at me. And I know that sounds great, but it wasn't.
It wasn't a solution.
Needed help. I really needed help. I mean, we were struggling, and when I look at what Sean went through, like we all went through it, but Sean left that band, and we had to lie to the public. We had to say, you know, he's got glandular fever, which he didn't. He was poorly, and they made him a cardboard cutout in a video, which people laugh at and they think it's really funny. When you actually analyse that, that wouldn't happen in today's industry. They would put their arm around you and they'd say, Scott, Sean, let's get you the help you need. Don't worry about the album. The single's not important. Let's get you better. Let's send you to rehab or whatever it is, to send you to counselling. Let's make sure that you as a person are okay. And then we'll put the album on hold. It didn't happen back in the day. And I'm not happy that I was a guinea pig back then, but I'm glad that people are recognising what we went through now and maybe making it better for other people that are coming through the ranks now.
Absolutely, because it's so important people do speak out, isn't it? And the fact that you did and you went into someone and said, I need help, and someone still wouldn't acknowledge it and listen, that's heartbreaking, because what more can you do? You feel that you can open up and say, help me. And when you can't get the help and someone's solution is throw a bit more money at someone, money ain't going to patch it up or help at all.
No, I mean, I got marched out of that record company by the security guards because I had gone crazy in there. Even that should have been an alarm bell, because I'm a nice guy. I pride myself on being a nice guy. I'm not aggressive like that. I never was in the past. And to see what I was doing in that record label and then not go, hang about, something's wrong with him. This isn't how this young lad normally acts. He's normally quite a nice guy. He's respectful to people. He's got manners. He's well brought up. The fact that I was in there screaming and shouting, swearing and saying, I've had enough and all that, that should have been enough for them to go, wait, let's listen to what the boy's saying and get him help. But it wasn't that way.
Did you boys all support one another, or did that in itself, was it at the time you were younger, was it like a different, because you see what happened with like Little Mix and people like that, do you know what I mean, where the difficulties, their interpersonal difficulties ended up causing them their distress, do you know what I mean? Look what happened to Jesse Nelson.
You know what, you're so young at the time, and I don't think we did support each other enough. You know, it's been well documented, you know, I spoke about it on the big reunion. I spoke about the problems I had with Jay. And, you know, I said some things about Jay. Everything I said was 100% true. And I'm not going to slag him off now. He's not here to defend himself. But what I will say is everything I said was true. But what I didn't realise was he was going, although he dealt with it in a bad way and he took it out on me, he was going through the same things. So he was probably struggling as well. So I have got to take that into account a little bit. And I don't think we were there to help each other. He was a little bit older. So, you know, I just think there should have been someone there. Instead of going, get on the stage and dance, there should have been someone there going, are you okay? Mentally strong? Are you physically strong? Are you eating? I mean, we didn't have, like, they have nutritionists now and you know, a masseur and like, we had nothing, nothing at all. Just beer in the dressing room and get on the stage. That was it.
It's crazy when you think about it now, isn't it? But better place now, you said, do you think? And especially for you guys that want to do
this. We're doing it. We're on the stages now because we want to be. We're doing gigs on our own terms. We get offered a gig. We look at it and we go, right, is that what we want to do? Is that how long we want to be on stage? Is that how much we want to be paid? We're very, you know, we're older now and we're wiser and we know what we want. And I think the difference is we can say no now. We can go, do you know what? Like sometimes some weekends we'll be really greedy and we'll do four shows in a weekend because we haven't done one for a while. Mm-hmm. Other times now we'll go, do you know what? Paul's pushing it. Let's just do the three. Let's push the other one back and see when we can get it again. Because it is about a life balance now. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I want to see my kids and I want to see my wife and they come along to the shows and that's not a problem and the kids love it and the wives love it. And, you know, it's a really nice environment for them to see now, you know.
Where can we see you on tour, Scott? Because you're doing quite a few locations, aren't you?
Yeah, we're all over the UK, a lot in Europe as well. And as I say, we've got a tour of Australia. But if you look online, there's... we're doing the 90s baby tour. I don't know exactly who's on it yet because it's still the lineup still being sorted, but it will be all of the people that you know and love from the 90s, I'm sure. It'll be your 911s, your A1s, your fives, your damages and stuff like that. We've only just sort of finished the other tour that we were doing before the lockdown. We were doing the Boys Are Back tour and obviously that was halfway through that. Then we had to do the dates when we can really, but we've just finished that not so long ago, which is amazing. It's nice to see all the boys again and get out there and see people without masks on their faces. It's lovely.
And it's what we all need after the last 2 years, isn't it? There's a lot to be said for going to see live music and a performance.
I really worried that people would be scared to go out and see live shows because they've been locked up for so long. And I did have a lot of fear that, you know, that people were going to be like, you know, have a bit of trepidation about getting back out there. It seems like people are going, do you know what? I need to get out. And, you know, the gigs that you were allowed to do sort of in between these lockdowns, these weird cage gigs where there were...
bizarre.
It was great that they tried it and it was great that we got to do some of those. But, like, to be honest with you, they weren't... I didn't see them as proper gigs. I mean, like half volume on some of them. You couldn't encourage the crowd to sing because, you know, obviously, you know, the particles of COVID in the air. I mean, it wasn't right. It was weird. And, you know, people in sections of six, like a five gig is people right at the front singing their hearts out. Everybody get up, keep on moving. We will rock you. You know, all these like big anthem songs and we're making people sit down. Come off it.
Yeah, honestly, when you think back to the stuff, I remember a friend almost getting kicked out of a venue for standing up while there was live music playing. Yeah. You just think, God, we really lived through some weird stuff, right?
That's like, the whole point. Like the whole point. I mean, okay, like an Adele concert. I don't think I think you could sit down at Adele concert. She's an amazing artist, but she does slower songs. I get that. Maybe a Westlife concert, you'd got away with it. But a five concert, we our main songs are in your face, big pop anthems. And, you know, on this new album, we've still got that. We've got some slower ones as well. We ask people to get their lighters out. And we're, you know, we've grown up a little bit with our music on certain songs. But the main bulk of our show is singing and dancing. And I remember, I'm going to embarrass Bobby now, But in between one of the lockdowns and we were allowed to do gigs, we went to the same event and I got up on the mic and I was singing. And I'm allowed to swear on this podcast, on here, aren't I?
Yeah,
on this radio.
Yeah.
So, So Bobby got that into one of my performances. He'd done a little slut drop in front of me. It was incredible to see. And he was singing all the songs. Do you remember, Bob?
I absolutely loved it. Because I was such a...
five song were you slut dropping?
I'll tell you which one. It was If You're Getting Down. And he done a love.
Oh, okay, I got down.
How low can you go?
Oh, wow, yeah. It was the highlight.
I can confirm.
We hope that you enjoyed our 2022 look back. We'll be back in the new year for a brand new series of Actors All Areas.
Merry Christmas, everyone, and have a wonderful new year.
Merry Christmas.